Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 50 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild ride through the 1987 John Hughes comedy, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week and possibly finish off Neil is David Brooke of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hello, I'm ready to finish what we started yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I want to point out that, first of all, I'm very happy that we've reached the 50 episode mark. That I think is great also. Nice. You know, earlier this week, we passed the halfway mark of this whole show, but 50 episodes is great. Now, again, this is one of the best minutes of the entire movie. The whole movie is amazing. There's no question about that, but this one just really hammers in how great of a writer John Hughes is, how great of an actor Steve Martin is, you know, and how they're able to just put something together so well. Now, what I was also amazed is the way that these minutes break up. They break up perfectly. You know, I obviously it would have been great to have this entire scene cut together, you know, what we talked about yesterday through part of the minute and what we're talking about today. But if you can't have that, this is the best way to break it up. You know, you have Steve Martin's first diatribe about one if you had a car, you know, four fucking wheels and a seat. The minute cuts, and the way this one begins, this minute begins with, you know, we get Edie McClure's face as she's getting ready to respond. The minute goes all the way till Neil exiting the airport. It's a great place for the 50-minute mark to begin. Yesterday, we had Neil's diatribe, and then we get the shot of the car rental woman, Edie McClure, and she responds to him and says, "I really don't care for the way you're speaking to me." So this enrages Neil even more than anything else that happened. You know, and his response is, "And I really don't care for the way that your company left me in the middle of fucking nowhere with fucking keys to a fucking car that isn't fucking there. And I really don't care to fucking walk down a fucking highway and across a fucking runway and to get back here to have you smile in my fucking face. I want a fucking car right now." And again, his delivery here is perfect. The way that he does this is just amazing. Now, I a few months ago, I was doing research for this movie and I came across, there's a YouTube video from Emma Stone when she was on Jimmy Kimmel Live. She apparently knows this entire scene by heart, and she recited it on Jimmy Kimmel Live. Now, everyone,
nice.
Yeah, everyone listening here is also going to hear everything get beeped out, just like, you know, hers is beeped out because she was on, you know, regular TV. But it's still great to watch the way that she does it, and hopefully people are enjoying it the way that we're talking about it also. And as he's saying all this to her, she really takes it in, you know, in a very interesting way, the way that she's just looking at him, you know, and she's, I think you can see the way that her mind is racing to, okay, how do I respond to something like this? You know, what do you do when you're dealing with customers, you're a customer service agent? How does one respond in this type of situation? And I think she does it very admirably, the way that she responds to him, you know, at the beginning where she says, "I really don't care for the way that you're speaking to me." You know, she doesn't get upset. She's saying it matter-of-factly. She's basically saying, respect me and respect the fact I'm not the one who's doing this to you. This is, you know, let's try and find a solution. But he doesn't even want to do anything about that. He wants to vent as much as possible. And I mean, there are even parts where you can think that she's looking sympathetically at him, you know, despite the way that he's talking, because she tries to, I guess, remain professional as much as possible.
Yeah, although I kind of get the feeling there's a specific shot kind of early on where the bit where she's scratching her head with a pen.
Well, that's a Ferris Bueller. That's a Ferris Bueller
here. Yeah, but I think the kind of look she's giving him there to me is a bit more like she's starting to seem a bit powerful now. I wonder if in her mind now she's almost thinking, she's obviously not happy with this guy just swearing in her face, but the look she gives there, there's almost like a bit of a, almost a look of power in my mind. In my mind, I think she knows she's about to say, she's about to screw him over, and knows that he's not
right.
Really
I love the way her eyebrows go up, and you see the, you know, all the eye makeup. Also,
yeah,
it, you know, it covers more ground by the way that it moves up like that. She yeah. does that really well. So I actually wanted to talk a little bit about, first of all, you know, we just heard Neil say 10 more times the word fuck in 30 seconds. So altogether, within 47 seconds, I think, he says the word fuck 18 different times. And that is the reason why this movie is rated R. There's no question about that. I decided to do a little bit of research into what the word fuck actually means, where it came from. Okay. Now, what do you know about that? You have any idea what the etymology of it is, where it originally came from?
I'd like to say it's of Norse origin, but I might be wrong. I know a lot of the English swear words come from the Vikings coming over and invading, but I might be wrong.
Okay, well, I mean, again, all the research that I did says that there's really no way of knowing exactly where it came from. They have a lot of different conjectures as to where it came from. Okay, so first of all, the word usually refers to sexual intercourse, but it is also commonly used as an intensifier or to convey disdain, which I think fits in with what Neil has done here. You know, no question about that. People originally thought that it was first used in 1475 CE, but no one is able to really prove when it really started being used. What's interesting about the word is that it can be used as a noun, it can be used as a verb, it can be used as an adjective, it can be used as an interjection, or it can even be used as an adverb, which is pretty rare. You don't have very many words that have five different types of formats for the type of the word. There are a lot of common phrases that employ the word with compounds to incorporate it, and that also helps to extend the word itself. You know, like you'd say maybe fuck off or fuck up, fuck quit, motherfucker, things like that. And it's pretty much considered by most people to be offensive and vulgar. It's not allowed to be said on TV or radio broadcasts in America. But what's interesting is that the Supreme Court in America ruled that the term fuck is actually protected under the First and 14th Amendments, where people are allowed to say whatever they want, or your freedom of speech. The etymology, that's what we were talking about, that it's probably a amalgamation of a lot of Germanic words that generally mean striking, rubbing, or actually having sex. They give a list here of a whole bunch of different words that are similar from Germanic languages. So you have words from German, Dutch, Afrikaans, Icelandic, Norwegian, Swedish. Basically, they say that what that probably means is that it does come from a more common Germanic word, which they think comes from the root fug, which means to blow, which is something that came from an Indo-European word named pug, which means to strike. And so they said that it probably was mixed together between a few of them, and that's where it eventually came from. Now, I found it more interesting, the fact that there are so many false etymologies for the word okay, which one of them is one of the ones that I actually thought is where it originally came from. So apparently it has been used so more extensively in comic speech, so it's very difficult to actually find a traceable way of finding its origin. There are a lot of different urban legends as to what the false etymology is. Some people say that it was originally an acronym. Okay, some people say that the word fuck actually came from Irish law, which they basically said that if a couple was caught committing adultery, they would be punished for unlawful carnal knowledge, okay, in the nude, which is where the word means f***ing. So it's interesting. I mean, it fits with the abbreviations. And they would actually write that word on top, f***ing, on the stocks when the people were put in those stocks, you know, so that everyone would know that this is what they did. I guess it's their sort of their Scarlet A, something like that. It's the Scarlet F. So, some people think that it came from in the church, that they would write forbidden use of carnal knowledge. And then there was another one which says that it actually is dealing with royal permissions, that were granted in the Middle Ages during the Black Death and things like that, which basically it's an abbreviation of fornication under consent of the king, which is the one that I had heard before. I knew that phrase beforehand, so I thought that was pretty interesting. There's another false etymology. It was originally known as pluck you, okay, but it was you is Y-E-W, which is something that apparently when the French would capture English archers, they would cut off their index and middle fingers so that they could no longer use their longbows. That they would basically say back to them, pluck you, you meaning Y-E-W, is a type of wood, is the material that was used to create, that they made longbows out of. So apparently that it started off saying pluck you and turned out to what we now say is fuck you instead. But apparently nobody knows when it was started, when they started using the word. It's been used so much over the years, and I don't think it's something that is going to basically leave the common languages. I mean, it's something that's always said.
Yeah.
There was actually a case in 1971 in the U.S. where a man was arrested. He was arrested in 1968, but the court case in the Supreme Court was in 71, where he was convicted of disturbing the peace because he had a jacket on him protesting the Vietnam War that said, the draft. And eventually the Supreme Court ruled that because of First Amendment, you know, free speech, that you are allowed to walk around with a shirt or a jacket that has that slogan on it because of free speech. Now, another thing that I found was that there's a whole bunch of different phrases that are used instead. Like a lot of TV shows will use a different word instead in order to make it sound as if this is what we're saying, but we're not really saying it. Do you have any ideas? Do you have any suggestions on some of those words, what they might be?
Well, there's quite a few. In the UK as well, there's a watershed in the UK where I don't know if they still have it, but you could only have strong swear words after 9 o'clock. So after 9 o'clock, anything goes. But you'd get
on regular TV.
On regular TV, yeah. But occasionally they'd sometimes censor them anyway. Certain channels in particular. I can always remember that the most famous one for me was Die Hard. They used to edit the famous Yippee-ki-yay motherfucker. Used to always be Yippee-ki-yay Kimusabi. Used to change it to that. It's just there's some hilarious cases of swear words being turned into loads of strange words. I think I can't remember what film it is, but there's a couple of I think it's Repo Man. I think on the Blu-ray you can actually watch the censored version where they've censored out all the swear words with weird and wonderful kind of words, because I think Alex Cox actually did it himself because he thought it'd be amusing, and
made his own version. They have a list here of all the of various substitutes that are used. So you have flippin, friggin, frickin, freakin, feck, fudge, flaming, forget, or any other number of similar sounding nonsense words. And they said, but in print it's more difficult, so a lot of times you'll have F with three asterisks, or F with one asterisk, or F line, you know, F dash K, or things like that. Or sometimes they would just have, you know, non-alphanumeric characters, you know, you have different symbols. You know, they use that a lot in like comics and things like that, where someone's swearing, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're saying the word fuck. They're saying any type of swear word or anything like that.
Yeah, flip and flipping. I must admit that flipping is one that I use quite a bit, especially since I've had kids and I've tried to tone down my swearing. Flipping neck and stuff like that is definitely one I use quite a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. So basically, at this point, she looks at him. And, you know, she says it very calmly, you know, and I think that if someone came into my office and said this entire diatribe that he said, and they said it to me this way, I would not respond so calmly.
No.
And she just basically says, may I see your rental agreement? And then he goes, I threw it away. Now, why would someone do that? you'd think that even though Neil is in such a bad situation, you'd think that he would still think about the fact that he doesn't need to throw away his rental agreement.
That's why I think it probably is that thing he's holding when he chucks it in his rage.
Right, no, obviously. Because you see him throw it away.
So I guess in the frustration, you might not have noticed it had gone and gone back to get it, I guess. It kind of makes sense, but yeah.
Yeah. No, like, why would he assume that they know that it's him?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, something like, I don't know.
True, yeah.
So he says, I threw it away. And then she turns to him and says, oh, boy. And then he looks at her and goes, oh, boy, what? And then she looks at him very calmly and says, you're which obviously is something we've been saying for the last 49 episodes.
Yes, and it's the perfect punchline to that whole sequence.
Yeah, I mean, that's also the reason why I chose it as the tagline for this movie, for this whole podcast, because it works so perfectly. It's something, you know, some of our guests, you wouldn't expect them to say it. So it works that way also, the same way. It's a shocking tagline, I guess you can say. And this movie does a great job because Edie McClure is not the person you would think that would be saying it. Mm. No question about that.
Well, I think it's a kind of testament to the skill of the performers and the kind of the writing as well, because it's having... kind of having otherwise polite characters and usually kind of old people or kids, usually in other cases, swearing is kind of, it's kind of a fairly well-worn kind of gag. And it can be, in that way, in my mind, it can often be a bit of a cheap gag. It's an easy way of getting a laugh, just getting some kid or some like 90-year-old grandma just randomly dropping an F-bomb or something. It has been done in other films less successfully, but here they just nail it. I think partly the lengthy kind of build-up of frustration leading to it, because you know how much has gone wrong to Neil at this point, and it's just built and built the frustration, and you, the audience, feels that, like, if I was, if all that had happened to me, I'd be pissed off and swearing at people. And so it works in that sense. Well, although I guess if we talk about Edie rather than Neil as being the one, but it's both of them, really. You don't expect Neil to be launching into all those swear words either.
No, not at all.
But it just does it so well. The performers, the actors just sell it so well that it's just the classic scene that it is, even if kind of just throwing in swear words randomly can sometimes be kind of lazy gag writing. It is not. It works perfectly here.
Yeah, completely. I mean, the people were trying to convince John Hughes to take the scene out, and he wouldn't do it. And I'm quite glad that he didn't, because this is such an amazing scene.
I was going to say, I'm really surprised he was allowed to do it by producers and things, by the studios, because you'd have thought, as you say, it is literally what makes it an R-rated movie, which would scare a lot of... I mean, especially I think definitely if it was made these days, I just don't think it'd happen, because the studios are so concerned with making everything PG-13 and so that you can get a bigger audience and stuff. They're scared of making R-rated movies. Because it's purely R-rated from one little scene that is, it's not actually as brilliant as it is. You could argue it's not actually needed, but certainly not the swearing. But at the same time, it is that it's a real killer joke, and it's right in the middle of the film. It just... centerpiece of the film, and I'm so glad they left it in, but equally I'm very surprised that a studios would do it. I guess John Hughes had the kind of heft and the sway in those days. He'd had enough success. Maybe if this was one of his first directorial films, he wouldn't have got away with it and they wouldn't have let him, but obviously he had the weight by this point.
It makes me wonder what made him think of doing this type of scene, you know, because in none of his other movies, the word fuck is said, you know. It's not,
unless it's something he'd wanted to say for a long time. And as I say, he didn't have the clout until then to get it in there.
Maybe so he said it, let's say it 18 times in one movie and get it over with.
Yeah, maybe.
Get it out. And then,
and I guess because, I guess because a lot of his other films were kind of dealing with teenagers and things, he was probably less likely to get swear words past the studios, because they would instantly think this film stars teenagers. We want to sell it to teenagers. So maybe he just wasn't allowed. And because this is a film about a pair of adults, so he could get away with it. Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
That's true. I think that does work. I mean, again, we'll get into the script. The script is slightly different here. So a little spoiler for people, a tease. We'll get there. And at this point, then the rest of this minute is 12 seconds of Neil walking through the airport, you see that he looks defeated. He realizes that he really is. There's no question about it. You know, he wasn't able to get that rental car, no matter what he does.
This last little bit, you also get the kind of hip-hop theme coming. I almost see it as the kind of like, let's carry on the journey, let's carry on the kind of madness kind of theme. It kicks in again, the hip-hop.
Yeah, and then we see him walk out of the airport itself and walk towards the curb before the minute ends.
What a nice tracking shot to bring us out of it.
Yes, that is definitely true. They do a nice job with that. All right, so you have anything else you want to say about this minute, David?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well. I think, yeah.
Great. So in the script, there are a few slight discrepancies here. First of all, it starts off by saying the girl regains her composure, clears her throat, fidgets with her uniform scarf. And then instead of saying, I don't like the way you're speaking to me, she says, I don't like the way you're talking to me. Again, minor discrepancy. But Neil's whole diatribe at this point is slightly different. It's varied. He basically says, first of all, they add in another in there. It's because he says, I don't really care for the way your fucking company. Instead, because in the movie, he says, I really don't care for the way your company.
Mm.
So interesting that you know, I guess, you know, they didn't want to cross the line by doing 19 times. 18 was enough. I don't know. So they add that one. And then within his diatribe, he also says, I'm a pretty nice guy under normal circumstances, and I have nothing against you except your happy demeanor too violently illustrates to me how miserable I am. So, I mean, again, I'm glad that they took it out because the way that Steve Martin delivers everything really flows very well. Mm. But that says a lot about his character, the fact that they have that in there.
Yeah.
You know, because he's basically saying that the reason I'm acting this way is because of everything that has happened to me. And you're reminding me of the fact of how miserable I am. So, yeah. And then the rest of the minute is pretty much the same. So it's just a few minor discrepancies there, but it still works.
It's interesting. I think that's almost, because we mentioned this a couple of days ago, I think it's not quite in the same way, but it's almost another case of him kind of feeling sorry for himself that they've removed. I think they've removed that whole gist of it. Again, I wonder if it makes him feel less sympathetic, and it was just a little trim to kind of lose another sense of that.
Definitely possible. No way of knowing. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Weekend Candy, where my guest will give their top five performances of John Candy. So, David, why don't you hit us with your top five John Candy performances?
This is another one where the only problem I had with this was I realized I've always kind of thought of myself as a John Candy fan, because I think mainly when I was a kid, when his films were coming out, I loved them. I used to watch all of them. But when I came to look at the list, I realized I haven't seen most of them for ages. So it was hard to kind of judge them against each other. But the list I've come up with, I've gone the number five, I've gone with Spaceballs. It's a film I have fond memories with, but it's a little lower down. I don't think John Candy's quite as memorable here as he is maybe in some other titles. But I love the film, so I wanted to get that on the list. Number four, The Great Outdoors. Again, another one I've not seen for a long time, but I used to enjoy it quite a lot as a kid. It was on TV quite a lot, it's another good fun one. Another one, number three, I've gone with Cool Runnings, and it's a very fun movie about Jamaican bobsledding team. I stuck that in there, and John Candy again, another winning performance. Number two, I'm going to go back with Uncle Buck, which I brought up earlier in my favourite John Hughes films. It's another one that I just have fond memories of. I used to watch it quite a lot as a kid. It was another one that was on TV all the time, and John Candy's brilliant. That it gets all kind of sides of him there. The brilliant comic performance, but also kind of that friendly kind of everyman. He has a kind of level of innocence about him, even if he often does the wrong things, or his characters do, and it gets that spot on an Uncle Buck. But number one is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I think John Candy is brilliant in this film. There's a lot of subtlety there. It's not just about gags. He's a really sympathetic character, not just a warm character, but he's quite a a melancholy and a sadness to him that really he gets across quite subtly. I mean, there's a few less subtle moments in here, but it's just a fantastic performance. I want to point out some favourite scenes, but they're coming later on in the series. I probably won't, but he just has some really beautiful moments, and I do think it's his best performance in this film that I remember. As I say, it's been a while, but I just think he really nails it. I think there's more. It's got layers to it. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and I think it's partly down to the performances and. I think Steve Martin's brilliant, but I would actually give John Candy the slight edge in this film. I think he really delivers quite a lot.
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer. Which of the two of them is better here? Because I think they're both amazing in this movie. Mm. So yeah, but you know, maybe I don't need to decide.
No.
Because we get them both. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So every day we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, where either my guest or myself give a little story about an adventure or misadventure that might have happened to us along the way. So, David, you got one last one for us to keep people wanting to come back on Monday for more?
Okay, guys. It's not an exciting story, this one. But this is just a story. It's just something that's when I think about traveling, there's just one kind of little moment that just stays in my mind. And this is more, I wanted to leave this as the last one because the last show I'm going to be on is it's a memory I have of a kind of a bad travel experience that we turned into a good one. So I'm going to end on a positive note. But yeah, basically I can't remember where we were going, but I was traveling again with my brother. I'm very close to my brother. We don't do as much together these days. We used to, and I was with my brother and some of his friends traveling down south. We're on the motorway or highway, as they call it in the States, and it was absolute full on, literally static traffic. We just got totally stuck. There's an accident or something. Weren't moving at all. And usually that's just hell. And it was a really hot day, so hell would be a good description. But we just made the most of it, because as I say, it was just like a bunch of friends. We were all in I think I was probably 18 or something like that, and the other guys were like 19, 20. So young guys, hadn't done a lot of traveling in our own cars. And we just made the most of it. We cranked the music up loud. If I remember correctly, at least one of the albums we listened to was the Prodigy's Fat of the Land album when it just came out. Cranked up the dance music loud, had the windows open. We just got out of the car and we were sat on the bonnet and stuff. And just, I just remember it was a blazing hot sun and we just made the most of it. We just did a bit of sunbathing. We had the music out. We just enjoyed ourselves. And despite it being a real crappy kind of potentially crappy drive, so yeah, that always kind of sticks in my mind. That
wow, one. Sounds like fun. Can't really complain about that. Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right, great. So David, would you like to once again, for one final time, tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, if you want to check out my reviews and the reviews of the pool of writers that write for my site, just head over to blueprintreview.co.uk.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher they might be using to listen to this show. To find me, just do a quick search in your favorite search engine for Movie Rob Bennett. You'll be able to find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find my website. So I want to thank David for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun. Hopefully everyone listening has also enjoyed what we're talking about.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Great. And until Monday, you're fine.
You're fine.